This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, Daryl and Hanif with you on the Pulse, the show that brings you the latest indie musical and fresh new music.
Yeah, and that was Come As You Are by Nirvana, taken from the second studio album, Nevermind. Yeah, in case you missed it, Nirvana's Nevermind celebrated its 30th anniversary at the end of last month, 24th September to be exact.
That's right, legendary band, legendary album. It was the second studio album released by the outfit from Aberdeen, Washington under the DGC label, and the first to feature their new drummer, a certain person known by the name of Dave Grohl.
Yeah, with his iconic album cover that's now been disputed slightly. I'm sure you must have heard the news recently, right? The album proved to be one that catapulted Nirvana's rise to stardom. It puts Nirvana, and to a certain extent that genre, you know, the genre that they are popular, grunge, on the map.
That's right.
Yeah, a lot has been said regarding the album. Its impact and legacy to the music world have been, I guess, dissected multiple times. So to commemorate its 30th anniversary, we're going to, I guess, do something a bit different. We're going to again hear a story from one journalist who actually managed to meet and speak to the band for almost an hour, which is something that is very unheard of these days, right?
I mean, usually it's 5 minutes.
Yeah, these days it's just 5 minutes of FaceTime, right? So, and he managed to speak to the band in between their tours around the region.
That's right. The lucky person's name is Sujas Parvidran, and he was a journalist at The Star when he was given the opportunity to speak to Nirvana when they made a stop in Singapore in between their tours of Australia and Japan.
He joins us on the show tonight via Zoom to share the experience. Thanks for being here, Sujesh. So I understand that you managed to conduct an interview with Nirvana in 1992 in Singapore, right after the release of Nevermind. Can you recall that experience for us?
Okay, my remembrances of interviewing Nirvana. Well, I think it's been half a lifetime ago for me. That was about 30 years ago. And if I had known back then that over the years, people will keep asking me about the interview, I probably wouldn't have done it. It was actually incidental because they were not very well known in this part of the world. And those days, there was no internet. So news traveled very slow. I think the album came out somewhere in late-ish September 1992. And they were creating waves in the US and the UK. I knew about them because I used to buy a lot of many of the US and UK publications. So somewhere in February 92, I think about 6 months after the album came out, that's when the record company asked a few Malaysian journalists, would you like to go down to Singapore and interview this band called Nirvana? So I think many of the journalists had never heard of them because they were not a pop band. So they said, nah, we got no time and all that. When I heard Nirvana, I said, well, this sounds interesting. Let me do this once, you know. So we just went back and there was a press conference at one of the major hotels there. I was a bit surprised because the people organizing this asked me late after that, would you like to interview the band? The whole band. So, I mean, I can't imagine now, but just after that, maybe about 3 p.m. in the evening, I remember, we were at the open cafe on one of the floors of the restaurant. I was sitting at the same table as Kurt Cobain, Chris Novoselic, and Dave Grohl, three of them facing me. And Kurt Cobain had his very dark shades on right through the interview. Very intense chap. He hardly smiled. I think he just wanted to get out and play. They didn't have a license to play there, the permit, you know how they are in Singapore and here. But he answered all the questions. The other two fellows, I think great Dave Grohl at the time was just coming up, had just joined the band for the Nevermind album. He didn't speak much. He was just making faces, you know. And the bass player, Chris Novoselic, was more interested in the... I was into photographs. He was more interested in the camera I was using. And he kept asking me questions about that. So I was wondering to myself, hey, is this guy going to snatch the camera from me? And they were, of course, he was mostly cracking jokes with the waitress. But Cobain answered directly to the point, you know, everything that I wanted to ask him. I think the interview took about close to an hour. I had it all on tape. At that point, there was no special feeling because, you know, there was just another band that was everybody was talking about back in the West. I couldn't imagine at that point that they would never come to this place again or perform here. And that about 2 years' time, Cobain would be gone. Over the years, a lot of questions were directed me from different publications, different people. 5 years ago, there is this British music writer called Nick Soulsby. He did a very comprehensive compilation, a book called Cobain and Cobain, Interviews and Encounters. And this was published in 2016. I think he was targeting it for Cobain's death anniversary in April 2016. And he managed to track down all, most of the journalists who interviewed Nirvana from 89 to about 93, 94. And in that book, one chapter on page 292, I believe, is dedicated wholly to the whole interview that I wrote for the Star was published there after permission from the company. Plus, I gave a forward to that. So that book, basically, sometime in the future, if I forget about what happened, that book is my reference as to, you know, what actually transpired during that 1 hour.
Mm. Your article, we've read the article, and the article is very descriptive. You know, you included your observation of, like you said, their behaviors and also your own experience conducting the interview. Based on that conversation, did you get the vibe that they're going to be big?
I got the vibe. Basically, the vibe I got was from reading all the Max and a lot of the, many of the journalists and publications out west, you know, I mean, I've been from the mid-80s until then, I've been reading about bands that were going to make it big. But I sensed that something about this band was different because those were the days of hair rock, glam rock, and you know, early 90s. What we call the indie and grunge scene was very nascent. I think there were earlier bands that were doing this indie scene, rock bands like Mudhoney, Soundgarden, you know. And they were a bit more low-key, but Nirvana, after when they did Nevermind, back in the West, in the US and UK, there was an explosion. You know, everybody was talking about them because I think the approach was very simple. I mean, he was very intense. There were no clever chords in his songs, you know, and he was not brilliant. He didn't portray himself as a brilliant guitar player or anything. Just the three piece, he kept it simple. And when I listened to the music, I thought, well, there is something very different from what was coming out at that time. The music was stripped down. It was very intense. Later, when I don't remember whether I reviewed the album, but over the years, that album kind of grew on me compared to a lot of the stuff that is coming out, you know. Everything else seemed a bit derivative after that. So, yes, I did get the sense that these guys were going big, but I also got the feeling that when I was talking to them that they really didn't care whether they were going big or not. They just wanted to get out. Cobain, they just wanted to get out and play, do something, get his music to the people. He wasn't bothered about what guitars he was using, whether the guitars broke us. He told me, he said, I don't care if a guitar breaks the string. I'm going to be playing because, you know, I just want to get the mood and energy out. That's what I remember him saying. So I mean, in the time of people, so musicians so conscious of image and, you know, everything to a formula, I got the sense that these guys were going to be different. But just how big, 30 years down the road, you know, I never thought that a radio station would be talking to me about talking to them.
Mm. I also heard anecdotal stories about how much of a prankster Kurt was. Was this true? Did you see this during your session with them?
No, I didn't. I have a feeling that probably people, the PR company and the record label probably scared him with stories about, you know, very big, watch yourself in Singapore, you know, and people are waiting to catch you or trip you up. Because, you know, rock music in Singapore, you know how it is, you know. So I was had a feeling that he was, during the interview, I think he felt that, well, I'm talking to journalists from this area, so I better just be straight. And he never took off his shades. He just kept looking at me very intense, and he hardly smiled. I had the feeling that he would just wanted to do it very straight and, you know, not get too complicated. And then later on, you know, I think they were having a party or whatever it is. They would go and jam, I heard, you know. But no, he didn't show any, like I said, Dave Grohl and Chris Novoselic were more of the interaction guys at that point, you know. They were joking and taking it lightly. They left all the answering to him.
Right. Looking back in hindsight, how did you feel at the fact that you managed to speak to one of the bands, even though you didn't know at that time, you know, one of the bands that were influential in the global music scene? Did it feel like you were part of something big?
There was a sense of that. But you see, I was at that point, I was a music and entertainment writer for the newspaper. I'd interviewed so many bands from the mid-80s right down to for about 10 years. So, you know, we used to go around to Singapore because most of the bands used to make a pit stop at Singapore to do PR, you know, Eric Clapton, Deep Purple. Sometimes even before they came to KL, they used to do the press conference in Singapore. So I had so many of them, you know, talking to them. And it was just sometimes, sometimes it was interesting, you know. I had to do an interview with Cliff Richard at Singapore Airport once, you know. This interview was basically very, very relaxed, you know, very casual. There was no sense of, you know, I think even the record company did not realize how big they were. Because, you know, like I said, those days we relied on record company press releases. And the record company people here at that point who were distributing them had no idea who this band was. They just got, I think they just got a circular from the head office in US saying, this band is touring this area, available for interview, please send journalists. You know, so they sent the word out. All the journalists in Malaysia said, no, accept me. I agreed to the interview because I felt that they were worth interviewing from what I'd read about them in the other articles in the press.
It's been 30 years since the release of Nevermind, the album that brought the band so much success. What's your personal thought and take on the album?
Well, the fact that 30 years later, people are still referring to it, you know, means a lot. I think it changed pop culture, music culture back in the 90s. And for me, I think in the early, as far as I'm concerned, the decades were divided into many, many eras. And for me, I think Nirvana, Nevermind, Kurt Cobain marked the last time when a band really meant anything, you know. Today, it's just about image, culture, you know. People just want to dance, and that's about it, you know. Grunge and Nirvana, I think, was the last time for me that, you know, there was any real intensity and originality in the music.
Mm. Does it still hold up now?
It does. If you ask people of my generation, well, I'm a baby boomer, so I think you know what that means, you know. I just entered my 60s. So if you ask people of my age, we will probably say that the bands that were important to us were the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Deep Purple, the 70s bands. Beyond that, I think if you ask us, what is memorable beyond that? I think many of us would say, because we were into rock, we'll say Nirvana, because they captured the essence of, you know, the grit and the intensity of the rock of the 70s. You know, when the record companies allowed you to go and do anything, and then they sold it. You know, and that is probably the last time, the last band that had that kind of attitude.
That was Sujesh Pavitran, veteran journalist and former music reviewer with The Star, sharing his experience interviewing Nirvana in 1992 after the release of Nevermind. Nevermind recently turned 30 and remains one of the most influential rock albums of our time. And to, I guess, commemorate that, we're going to play one of the biggest hits from that particular album. I think you know what it is. This is Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana, taken from Nevermind, right here on The Pulse, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.